Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In this video, I want to give you an update on the situation in Cuba. If you've been following the recent postings, you'll know that Cuba is on the brink of disaster. It's looking at potential economic collapse. And unfortunately, I also reported on the fact that a fire broke out at the supertanker port, which holds a lot of the oil. And that fire blazed and has caused a lot of damage. And there's now a big cleanup operation. But more importantly, it's causing a lot of problems because a lot of the fuel is located there. And it's the only supertanker port in the country. So it's the only place where the giant vessels can come and dock and unload large quantities of fuel. And without that port, there's even more pressure on the Cuban economy. So in today's episode, we'll have a look at the problems that Cuba is facing, how it got itself into this situation and what the challenges are. We'll look at the fire and then we'll look at the aftermath of that fire. And it's been really interesting that Venezuela have stepped up and said that they are prepared to come in and help Cuba. So we'll talk about some of the issues around that. We'll then have a look at an announcement that's been made by Cuba about opening up the country to external overseas investment. And I think this is a really interesting point. If you've watched the other videos that I posted, I was talking about who could actually come in and help out. And obviously one of the big options is China, because China has its Belt and Road Initiative. It's been investing billions and billions in various countries all around the world. So Cuba would be an obvious choice if China wanted to get involved, because they're both communist countries and Cuba would offer some really interesting opportunities for China. So I'll go through some of the possibilities of what could happen. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is likely to happen with Cuba over the course of the next 3 to 6 months and what the implications of this are for the global economy. So before we get started, as usual, I'm going to ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video if you're enjoying the content. And also please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters so you can skip over things if you're not that interested or you don't have enough time to watch them. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube, Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. Cuba's a Caribbean island that's located close to the southern tip of Florida. In fact, it's so close that the old joke goes that the capital of Cuba is Miami. Cuba has a limited amount of natural resources. It does have some oil, but not enough to cover its own demand, so it needs to import oil and other energy products. And its main resources are its people and its land. And Cuba's most famous for its two biggest exports, which are cigars and rum, which are related to its two biggest crops, tobacco and sugarcane. So Cuba has a lot of similar characteristics to other countries that we've covered on the channel that are having economic difficulties right now. It's a net importer, and the predominant things that it's importing, which are fuel and food, have increased dramatically in price since the start of the Ukraine war. One of the other major factors that's affected the economy is that in the 1950s, Cuba decided to become communist. Led by Fidel Castro, they developed a very close relationship with the Soviet Union. So much so that Russia actually provided oil to the country for free in exchange for the communist relationship. As a result, Cuba developed a lot of its infrastructure based upon oil and has oil-fired power stations all across the nation. When the Soviet Union broke up in the early 1990s, this caused major problems for Cuba because Russia was no longer supplying it with the same volume of oil. This caused major economic problems in Cuba. However, they later developed a relationship with Venezuela, which is also communist and has the largest reserves of oil out of any country in the world. In exchange for sending highly educated people over to Venezuela, Venezuela provided large quantities of oil. This relationship worked well until Venezuela was subsequently sanctioned by the USA and the rest of the Western world. And that led to major economic problems in Venezuela itself and a massive reduction in the amount of oil that's being sent to Cuba. So the current situation is that Cuba is a net importer of energy products. It doesn't have large amounts of foreign currency. It doesn't have any major valuable assets. And unfortunately, it doesn't really have any friends in the world. Because back in the 1960s, when Fidel Castro was running the country, Cuba fell out with the IMF. It originally took a loan with the IMF, but after a dispute, the relationship broke down irreversibly. So the problem that Cuba's facing right now is that it needs large amounts of cash to be able to import fuel and food, and it doesn't have any. As I reported in a recent video, a major fire broke out in Cuba's largest oil storage facility. One of the main storage tanks was reported to have been struck by lightning and then caught fire. And this fire then spread to other tanks. And it's reported that up to four of the major tanks have been affected. And these tanks hold up to 300,000 barrels of oil each. So firstly, that's a lot of fuel to lose. And secondly, it's a huge amount of revenue for Cuba right now at a time when they can't afford to replace that oil. It took around 4 days to get the fire under control, and one firefighter is confirmed dead, and there are 14 others unaccounted for. Hundreds of other people have been injured in the blaze. And the aftermath of the fire now shows the amount of damage that has been caused to this facility. And this is a major problem for Cuba, because this facility is the only port that they have that's able to allow supertankers to dock. And when you're taking the delivery of large amounts of fuel, obviously it's much better from an economic perspective to do that in one ship, because you only have to have one ship dock, you only have to do one unloading process, and then you can store all of the facilities. So this fort is close to Havana and feeds the capital city. And now that it's been damaged, there are two main problems. Firstly, Cuba's lost a lot of fuel and it's lost the capacity to be able to store fuel. So that's going to present a logistical problem for the country. But more importantly, they don't have the ability for these supertankers to be able to come in. And at a time when Cuba needs fuel, they need to get as much fuel into the island as possible. So the alternative that they have now is that they'll either have to have smaller ships bringing smaller quantities of fuel, or the big tankers will have to unload some of the fuel into smaller ships, which can then move into the smaller ports. So this has come at a really bad time for Cuba. They're already in crisis, and the last thing that they needed was to add even more complexity to the delivery and receipt of fuel. As a direct result of the fire, the fuel crisis in Cuba, which was already chronic, has got worse. As oil is the main source of energy for producing electricity in the country, the lack of oil is meaning that we're now seeing extensive blackouts. And it's been reported that Cubans are now experiencing up to 18 hours a day without electricity. Cuba has long relied on the 2.4 million barrel Matanzas terminal, which is located around 60 miles from Havana, for most of its crude and heavy fuel imports and storage. We have to do a survey and see what the availability is of our refineries and what the relationship is with the ports, the Cuban president announced on TV. This situation comes at a time when Cuba was already suffering chronic power outages, fuel, food and medicine shortages, and lining up for hours to purchase basic goods. Director of University of Texas at Austin's Latin America and Caribbean Energy and Environment Department stated that the accident had aggravated the energy crisis due to an obsolete power grid and poor maintenance. Now there is a lack of logistics to supply these plants, an extreme situation, a difficult situation for the Cuban people that unfortunately has no short-term solution, he said. Since 2020, Cuban imports have fallen 40% and its gross domestic product has fallen by 10%. Inflation hit 77% in 2021 and is reported at 28% so far in 2022, although there is no real explanation as to how inflation has fallen so dramatically. And most independent analysts have put price increases in the triple digits. Havana, home to 20% of the country's 11.2 million inhabitants, had been spared the worst of the energy crisis until this month, when rolling four-hour blackouts every 3 days began and diesel fuel vanished. Since the oil depot blaze, power outages are more frequent, longer and less predictable. A local resident stated, "We are now more affected. We are going from blackout to blackout." In terms of the search for gasoline, another resident stated, "The queues are quite long and sometimes you have to go from station to station, and when you find it, you have to wait for hours." So the situation's really bleak right now in Cuba and they need some help. And luckily, Venezuela have stated that they are prepared to come along and offer some assistance. Venezuela's president has stated that Venezuela will support Cuba in the reconstruction of its only supertanker port in Matanzas, which was partially destroyed by the fire. The president has directed Venezuela's oil minister and the president of the state-run PDVSA to get in touch with the corresponding Cuban authorities to begin the design of the reconstruction of the supertanker yard. "We're going to design where it will be built, where the loading yard will be, and then begin the construction." Venezuela remains Cuba's main source of imported crude oil and shipped around 57,000 barrels per day to the island in the first 7 months of this year. So Venezuela are still the main ally of Cuba, and the 57,000 barrels of oil they're sending is great, but unfortunately Cuba needs at least 100,000 barrels of oil just to keep the lights on, just to keep electricity going through the country and to keep fuel in people's tanks. And the problem that we get in situations like this is as you go below that break-even level, then you have blackouts. And the blackouts mean that there's less electricity. And that means that any productivity in the country, any companies that rely upon electricity for producing things, falls. And so those companies then have to start working on a shutdown arrangement. They produce less, therefore they make less revenue, therefore they can employ less people, they have to make people redundant. And the whole situation becomes a really vicious circle. And that's the situation that Cuba's in right now. Because all of their infrastructure is so reliant upon oil, as soon as they stop receiving that oil, then it's going to throw everything into chaos. And this fire that's occurred is going to make the situation significantly worse because they were able to take in those big deliveries when the supertankers came, and they can't do that right now. Another country that's reached out to Cuba and offered some help is Russia. And as I mentioned earlier in the video, historically there was a very strong relationship between Russia and Cuba. That's how Fidel Castro's communist regime managed to survive for so long, because it was being fed with large quantities of oil by Russia. So there is a possibility here that Russia could decide to reignite that relationship. It's looking for new trading partners, it's looking for new relationships, and this could present a really interesting opportunity for Russia to help out. In terms of developing this relationship, Russia sent a tanker to Cuba with 700,000 barrels of oil on it. And if you take a rough estimate of around $100 per barrel, that equates to around $70 million worth of fuel that Russia is gifting to Cuba right now. Now, originally that tanker was destined to go to Matanzas, but obviously since the fire, they've had to change the plans. Russia's oil is being carried by a Liberian flagged tanker called the NS Laguna. And the destination was changed from Matanzas to Cuba's Antilla port. In addition to this, it's also been reported that Venezuela's state-run PDVSA has also diverted two shipments of crude that were headed for Matanzas. So the good news here is that Cuba is getting some support from Venezuela and Russia. But the bad news is that Cuba's capacity to be able to manage these deliveries is now much smaller, and they need more frequent deliveries. In an effort to try to solve the economic crisis, Cuba has announced that it's now intending to open up its wholesale and retail trade to overseas investors for the first time since 1959. The deputy trade minister stated on evening TV that foreign investors would be allowed to fully own local wholesalers for the first time or to enter the market through joint ventures. Retail operations will be more restricted, but she opened the door to some public-private ventures in that sector as well. The reforms would allow foreign-owned entities to invest in warehouse and back-end logistic operations, supplying state-run and private businesses, for example, supporting the country's effort to improve efficiency in its notoriously unproductive retail sector. Gonzalez said that Cuba would selectively allow some foreign investors into the retail market, providing the investment contributed to the country's socialist goals and lowered prices. The domestic trade minister added that the state would maintain its dominance in retail, but allow for some public-private ventures. We will prioritise these type of initiatives with foreign investors already in Cuba and allied countries, she said. Both officials said the goal was to get more raw materials and goods into the hands of producers and consumers on the island. However, commentators have questioned whether or not this reform will work. It's a step in the right direction, but far too little and too late, said Cuban economist Omar Evelaini. He went on to state that the measures were riddled with caveats and red tape. Both announcements are full of words such as exception, control and conditions, as if they did not understand how serious the crisis is. So this announcement's really interesting because for the first time Cuba is opening itself up to the outside world. However, as we just mentioned, there are a lot of caveats. And it seems that they only want to do deals with other countries who either have a relationship with Cuba already or have the same socialist principles. So that's a really limited market. And basically, what Cuba is saying is that the only suitors that it wants to get into bed with are Venezuela, Russia, and potentially China. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this update because the crisis in Cuba hasn't gone away. It's not going away. They are on the brink of economic disaster and collapse. And the fire that broke out at the main terminal has really added to their problems. That's the last thing that Cuba needed right now, because this country probably more than any other in the world, is highly dependent upon oil. It's built all of its infrastructure on oil. So electricity is produced by oil, and everybody uses transport that needs gasoline. So it's the fuel, literally, for the whole economy. And without oil, the economy is starting to implode. And it's been in that situation for some time, but this fire is making things worse because it's making the logistics of taking deliveries, storing oil, and distributing oil much worse, because this was the main port and the main storage area that the country's been relying on, particularly Havana, which is located relatively close. And the main problem that Cuba has right now is that it just doesn't produce enough revenue. It's a net importer. The goods that it's exporting are not valuable enough, and there's not enough of them to be able to keep the economy going. And over the last 60 years or so, Cuba has relied upon other socialist countries to bail it out. So back in the 60s, 70s and 80s, it had a very strong relationship with the Soviet Union. And that worked fantastically well. And it looked like the communist dream was working. However, as the Soviet Union started to fall apart, Cuba became collateral damage. And the lack of oil that was coming for free meant that the economy went into freefall. And Cuba had to introduce what was called the special period, and it was a real nightmare. But it managed to get itself out of that situation by developing a strong relationship with Venezuela. Now, the relationship with Venezuela was never quite as good as it was with Russia, but it managed to keep things ticking over. But unfortunately, because Venezuela then became sanctioned, it was unable to keep that flow of free oil coming, and now we've seen Cuba move into another situation of crisis. So already at the start of this year, it was in a perilous position. But what's happened since Russia's invasion of Ukraine has made things far worse, because as you'll know if you follow the channel, the price of oil rose by around 50%, and that is a disaster for a country that's importing large quantities, particularly a country like Cuba that doesn't have any foreign currency reserves. So that's why the country has had long periods of blackouts and has been struggling to put fuel in the station pumps. And that's caused the whole economy to go backwards. And we've seen a migration of people, a brain drain. Now, there's been a lot of comments on the channel saying it's very difficult for Cubans to leave. And that's right. But the people who are leaving are the best people in Cuba. These are the people, the highly skilled people, the highly educated people that Cuba needs to try to get itself back on track. So the situation and the outlook for Cuba is absolutely bleak right now, and their only real option is to seek help. And we've seen in this announcement that they're now prepared for external investment, but they need major external investment. And the only real suitors right now are Russia and China. Now, as you may have seen from some of the other videos I've posted, China have their Belt and Road Initiative. And this is something that China's been developing for a long period of time, and they've invested tens of billions of dollars into over 70 countries all around the world, helping them develop infrastructure, helping them get their economies back on track, and making these countries self-sufficient. And Cuba would definitely tick all of the boxes in terms of the sort of country that needs this type of investment. And obviously China is also a socialist country, so it may well be very interested in coming along and having a chat with Cuba and developing some infrastructure, investing some money, and also giving them some oil. But the problem with the Belt and Road Initiative is that everything is set up as a loan. So China structures these deals as debt. And if you can't keep your repayments going on that debt, then you have to have a difficult discussion with the Chinese as to what that's going to look like. And I reported recently that Sri Lanka took on some investment for a port called Hambantota. They couldn't keep up the repayments. And as a result of that, they gave a 99-year lease to China for that facility. So essentially, China now owns a port in Sri Lanka. And that's caused a lot of concern in India and the USA, because China could potentially set up a military base in that port. And obviously, India doesn't want that because it's very close to where they're located. And the situation in Cuba could follow a similar path. Theoretically, China could invest tens of billions of dollars into developing new refineries, new power plants, maybe some new airports, some railways, some infrastructure. And if Cuba can't keep up the repayments on the loans that are provided, then China may then have a discussion with Cuba and say, well, in return for these non-payments, we would like a lease over some of your land. Or maybe design a small city like they've done in Colombo Port City in Sri Lanka, where a lot of Chinese expats could go and get tax benefits and those sort of things. So that's the sort of discussion that could be had. Now, obviously, the USA would be very unhappy about that, because if China was to take a stake in Cuba and start building infrastructure for China, then that would essentially give China a base around 500 miles from the southern tip of Florida. And that could be a major security concern for the USA. Now, the other option that Cuba has is Russia. And Russia right now is looking for new friends. It's having to develop new relationships because it's been sanctioned by a lot of the Western world. It's having to find new trading partners. Now, Cuba is not an attractive trading partner from an economic perspective. Russia will not earn any revenue from Cuba because they don't have any. But from a political perspective, Cuba offers some really interesting options for Russia because of the location so close to the USA. And as we know, President Putin doesn't make all of his decisions based on economics. If he did, he wouldn't have invaded Ukraine, because economically it was a bad idea. Having all of the sanctions applied against Russia will damage the Russian economy. But he isn't doing things just based on a P&L, just for revenue. He's got another agenda, and Cuba could well make its way onto that agenda. Having a relationship with Cuba, having a base where Russia could start building things, could be a really interesting political move for President Putin. So at the moment, Russia's just providing shipments of oil, but the relationship could easily develop further if President Putin has a master plan and decides that he wants to have some sort of base located close to Florida. So developing a relationship with China or Russia, or potentially even both of them, is a really interesting option for Cuba. But unfortunately, that's probably a medium to long-term option. In the short term, Cuba needs a large quantity of oil and an influx of cash. So it needs to do a deal really quickly. But in the short term, over the next 3 to 6 months, it's unlikely that Cuba will get enough fuel to keep things going. So it's likely that the blackouts will continue. It's likely that the economy will deteriorate further. It's likely that we'll see some civil unrest in the country. People are getting very unhappy. They don't want to be waiting 18 hours to fill up their car. They don't want to be sitting in the dark, unable to cook any food, no entertainment for long periods of the day. These are the sort of conditions that fuel civil unrest. So it'll be interesting to see what happens through the course of the rest of this year, whether or not the Cuban authorities can strike a deal very quickly with somebody like Russia or China, or if the whole country is going to literally collapse into a state of chaos. So I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments as and when they happen. Hopefully you found today's episode useful, informative and educational. If you've liked what I've said, please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.